This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. The first round of negotiations on the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, wrapped up on Sunday. The renegotiation of this two-decades-old NAFTA, a free trade agreement, is one of U.S. President Donald Trump's main campaign promises and a key pillar of his America First agenda. On the line, we have Philip Oxhorn, Professor of Political Science at McGill University in Montreal in Canada. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to begin with the question of optics. The media has focused on Donald Trump's America First agenda, but in a serious sense, don't Justin Trudeau of Canada, as well as Enrique Peña Nieto of Mexico, also have their own country for a Mexico First, a Canada First? Don't they have to pander to domestic audiences in these negotiations?
No, of course they do, and particularly in Canada, where there is a real contrast in positions, because, for example, much of Canada's dairy products are regulated, and they want more access to the U.S. and less access from milk producers in the U.S. because of the higher prices in Canada. Mexico, same situation in other sectors. For example, the U.S. is concerned about the content, how much of it is built in the U.S. on cars, for example, that come from Mexico to the U.S. But if you increase the U.S. content in cars exported from Mexico, that means Mexicans could lose if they were providing the content before.
Now, we understand also that Mexico is facing elections perhaps mid-year next year, July 2018. Do you think that's going to stiffen the resolve of President Nieto, especially in the kind of toing and froing that's happened between Mexico and Washington over the wall?
Oh, no, it's very important, but both for the U.S. and for Mexico, that everything is set to try and get a deal done before the next elections, midterm elections in the U.S., presidential elections in Mexico. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that a successful negotiation that doesn't destroy the economy, that comes up with some kinds of compromises that work well for all three countries, will only help Peña Nieto's party win again and help the Republicans do well in the midterm elections. The other is that if this is still pending, the uncertainty will only hurt the incumbent parties in both countries.
Now, of course, NAFTA is pretty old now. It's over two decades old. President Donald Trump called NAFTA a disaster, the worst deal in history, he says. But the criticisms of NAFTA come from all kinds of sectors, I think from the political spectrum, both left and right. In fact, recently, I think Mexican Catholic bishops accused NAFTA of causing the cultural death of their nation, saying multinational grain traders have made huge profits, dumping subsidized U.S. corn on Mexico, crushing the Mexican farm economy. In terms of assessments, because it's been on for such a long time, is there a consensus as to what NAFTA has done for the peoples of North America?
Well, there's two issues. One is that the economies have become so intertwined that to separate them would be extremely painful and costly. The other is whether the benefits of having become so intertwined are all that great. And I think that it's clear that NAFTA has allowed the U.S., Canada, and Mexico to generate a lot of wealth. The problem is that in all three countries, but more in Canada, more in the U.S. and Mexico, that a relatively small number of people receive the benefits of that growth. And so the next phase of NAFTA is going to need to address these distributional issues to make sure that the lower segment, quintiles of the population are not marginalized from the benefits of the economic wealth that's been generated by trade. Back in the late 1990s, when there was talk under President Clinton of a free trade area of the Americas, North and South, progressive economists said, well, that would be great. And 10 years earlier, they would say, no, free trade was a problem. What they were saying in the late 90s was that free trade is important because it can generate resources. What's more important is how those resources that are generated are distributed. And that's even truer today than it was 10 or 15 years ago. And the reason for that are all of the dislocations that we see pretty much everywhere in the world. When people feel that they've been marginalized from the economic success of the past 20 years to the benefit of a very small percentage of the population. That's always been an issue in Mexico, and it's been a bigger issue in the U.S. than it's been in Canada, and they've really come to the fore with the electoral dynamics in both countries.
Now, I understand, and you're in Canada, Professor Oxhorn. Now, could you help us understand this? I understand that coming into the negotiations, there was talk that the U.S. had formally demanded that Chapter 19 dispute resolution panels, which are favored by Canada, be scrapped from NAFTA, and that in response to that, Ottawa has vowed to walk away from the talks before it accepts such a NAFTA without panels. Could you help us understand this complex matter? Because I understand that one of the issues at stake here is something called softwood lumber, and that Trump is particular concerned that the dispute resolution panels have often favored Canada in on the question of softwood lumber.
Well, that's right, and the truth is that without those panels, however much they may have favored Canada, Canada will do worse without them. It's because of the sheer size of the U.S. economy and Canada's dependence on that. You know, these kinds of structures, these formal institutions for mediating conflict, in general, they favor the weaker of the two parties, which is inevitably Canada and Mexico vis-a-vis the U.S. So there's no way that Canada could come out ahead if those are weakened. And conversely, the U.S. sees it as a threat to its own sovereignty, as an attack on America First, really for the same reasons that Canada is so much in favor of them.
What chance is these talks will break down and that NAFTA will die?
Well, I think that you know, no one knows what's going to happen in today's world because things have just changed in unexpected ways. But the reality is that the cost to the U.S. if NAFTA were to disappear tomorrow would be very, very high. The economies are so intertwined that to cut that flow off would inevitably increase costs on items near and dear to the American consumer. You know, a good percentage of the auto industry is now producing in Mexico, and so if auto prices go up, then U.S. consumers are going to have to pay more, and that's never going to be popular. In fact, the auto industry is very much against having more U.S. content in cars produced in Mexico for export back to the U.S. And so you know, it's the kind of thing where a compromise is almost inevitable because the consequences of not coming up with a compromise are just so great for the economic uncertainty, the instability when intertwined economies are torn apart, and for the U.S. in particular, the impact that would have on prices.
No, I understand. I mean, lastly, if we could very quickly wrap this discussion up, is that diplomatic tensions between the countries haven't been particularly good. I understand that the post of U.S. Ambassador Khanna was left vacant for a long time. It's only just been filled by, I believe, Kelly Craft. Is this usual in the relationships between the three countries, not having ambassadors, the grandstanding and such?
Well, I think that what a person like Trump does is he ups the ante for his own gain, and what he thinks, rightly or wrongly, would be the gain of the U.S. And so these situations are really a consequence of the very unique and unprecedented political dynamics that we're seeing in the United States. And so I think that the ups and downs are inevitably going to be made worse by the ups and downs of the politics and political situation in the U.S. The other issue, and this is really what started all of the suspicions about Trump as a potential president, is that Trump has decided long ago to use Mexico as a scapegoat. So blame it on the immigrants, blame it on cheap imports from Mexico. That's, for Trump, the reason why you have the issues about insecurity, inequality, and many of the nationalist fears that are driving supporters for Trump into his corner. And so the tensions are inevitable, and it's important for Trump at the same time not to come off as being ineffectual. I mean, he actually has a lot invested in that. And so for him, it's even more important in some ways than it is for the other two leaders to come up with an agreement, because if he doesn't, then it's like the failure to replace Obamacare all over again. Major promise that unites much of his support base, met or people don't feel that it's met, the backlash against Trump will be very, very great. And it's something that Trump really can't afford given the ineffectual policy-making processes he's tried to lead ever since he took office.
Thank you very much. That was Professor Philip Oxhorn, a professor of political science at McGill University in Canada. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more business news and analysis at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.